So Edwin, thanks for joining me today. I really appreciate it.
It's good to be here.
I would like to go through all your accolades, but we don't have the time. But I mean, award-winning journalist, and you've written a book that I want to talk about today, that get you to give me your input on the war against the weak. So the floor is yours. I'm fascinated by the topic. I've read, not read the book, but I've read some of the reviews of the book, and I am right in line with your.
I think what you'll find interesting is that the war against the weak epitomized the height of scientific knowledge at a time when scientific knowledge was used for racism, for genocide, for oppression of people, where it was not used to strengthen people, but to attack the perceived weak and to attempt to subtract them from Earth. Meaning, the war against the weak is about eugenics, and eugenics was America's plan to create a white, blonde, blue-eyed master race, to have dominion over everyone else on planet Earth, and in fact, to subtract everyone else 10% of the time. So in the United States, they had hoped to take away some 14 million people, what they called the bottom tenth. And when they were done subtracting those people, they wanted to take the remaining 10% bottom. And after that, 10%, 10%, until there was no one left except those who resembled themselves. And who was it they wanted to get rid of? People, white people with brown hair. They wanted to get rid of Jews, Latinos, Negroes, Native Americans, mixed race, Southern Europeans, women who they believed smiled a lot but didn't say a lot, which meant they were beguiling, people that they thought had a genetic predisposition toward prostitution, because they believed you were not thrown into prostitution. Prostitution was thrown into you before you were born. They wanted to get people who they thought had a genetic predisposition to poverty. It isn't that you were born into poverty. Poverty was born into you. They actually believed in born criminals. I know you've heard that term, born criminals, but that's because the legions of elite scientists from Harvard, Yale, Princeton, from all the corners of academia in the early 20th century, believed that people were predestined by a genetic content to be poor. And even if a man was poor, was not poor, they believed, according to Mendel's theory of inheritance and heredity, like the peas, that somewhere along the way, this man who had done nothing would bear progeny that one day would be a blight upon society. And so they decided that they would subtract 10% of the population at a time. They had a mass meeting of elites, of intellectuals, geneticists, sociologists, demographers, scientists, political leaders. Many of them were breeders. And of course, with breeders, farmers, ranchers, they believed that you could actually create a better a herd of cattle and a better field of wheat by subtracting the lesser strains and accentuating the more desirable strains. And so they thought that by subtracting these people, they would actually enhance humanity. And how did they want to do that? Well, they had this meeting, as I said, and they thought, let's use gas chambers. They wanted public gas chambers. This is in 1912, decades before the Hitler regime. And when they couldn't get gas chambers legislated into the United States, not that they didn't try, starting in 1906 with the first euthanasia bills in Ohio, when they couldn't get gas chambers in, they turned to forced surgical sterilization. They turned to confinement in so-called health sanitariums. They went into marriage prohibition, marriage vetoing, and marriage retraction, where if they didn't like who you married, they would unmarry you. And so this was the war against the weak, and eventually, after proliferating in the United States right through World War One and the period after World War One, it was transplanted into Nazi Germany, and of course Hitler studied it and adopted his own fascist anti-Semitism into a new type of medicalized racism. And of course he had a pursuit for the master race, and the master race attempted to duplicate what American science or pseudoscience had begun, but he would do it not with theories and with legislation, but with marching armies and with gas chambers.
Wow. You know, when you mentioned that it was in the United States, the first thing I thought of was Hitler. But what you're saying is that he just stole our ideas.
Well, he didn't steal our ideas. He was handed them.
Okay.
The Rockefeller Foundation, the Carnegie Institution, the Harriman Railroad fortune spent millions of dollars to transplant the American notion of eugenics into Germany just before the Hitler regime took root in 1933. And so you see it's even reflected in his book, Mein Kampf, where he said the American states have solved the problem of the races. Mm. And of course, America was supporting the Hitler regime with pseudoscience, with dollars to promote, of course, pseudoscientific congresses, conferences, institutions, journals, and we know the rest.
Yeah, yeah. You know, my question then immediately goes to on this topic, you know, we're here in Chicago at Autism One. Could it be possible that vaccines could have something to do with the war on the week?
You're here in Chicago, where the municipal court of the city of Chicago was a major player in the eugenic campaign from coast to coast, from California to Connecticut, where the municipal court of Chicago took it upon itself to interpose its theories, its scientific theories, and passed out legislative guides and handbooks for how to make model legislation. We're in Chicago. Now, of course, I couldn't speculate about vaccinations because I'm not a chemist. I'm a historian. But I do know that one of Germany's most vicious eugenicists, Mengele, chose as a course of investigation vaccinating people with viruses. He would vaccinate the twins and then see how one twin responded as opposed to the other. And, of course, he would then do live autopsies to attempt to make his clinical reports.
Mm. So medical experimentation at the highest level, at least with Mengele, with vaccines.
Well, Mengele was at the lowest level, but he was spawned by the highest level because the Rockefeller Foundation was sponsoring his boss. His boss was Otmar Vashor, and he was the chief Nazi doctor, the chief Nazi eugenicist in the Third Reich. And he, of course, wanted to destroy the Jews. He was virulently anti-Semitic. He was into genocide, and the Rockefeller Foundation knowingly sponsored him, and it was his assistant, Mengele, who went into Auschwitz to continue the program of investigation into twins.
Mm. Now, when you said they would do live autopsies, when they were alive, they would begin to...
That's right. Live autopsies. And your name is Bollinger.
Yes.
And we're in Chicago. But Baby Bollinger, do you know about Baby Bollinger?
No.
Baby Bollinger was left on the table to die by one of the leading medical authorities in the United States and spawned an entire movement called the Black Stork. They made a movie out of it. They had a national tour. It was that if your baby has a defect, love it by letting it starve to death and sending it to heaven. And so when I knew I was speaking to the Bollingers, I only went back in my mind to Baby Bollinger and the Black Stork, meaning the stork that brings not life, but death. And this was epitomized by the scientific community at the time. I have made a 5-decade career into investigating the false steps of established medicine. And unfortunately, we see it yet again today in our society. Because I am not a doctor and neither are you, we don't understand at this moment just how false some of the medicine is. But we know that most medicine is influenced by corporate interests, by pharmaceuticals, by money. Research is sponsored by pharmaceuticals, by money. But none of us are in a position to evaluate, and that's exactly how the moneyed interests would like it done. I can't tell you the number of experts who looked down on everyone and said, you are wrong, we are right, they are born criminals, they should not exist. They used to say if a black man would put a toga on and speak Latin, he would not be a Roman. And remember, they were interested in future crime. And that's what eugenics was. Mm. It was about a crime that was never committed, that was perceived as a crime, that was never to be a crime.
Minority Report, future crime. And the only really future crime was they weren't blonde-haired and blue-eyed.
Well, blonde-haired and blue-eyed was the characteristic, but what they wanted to avoid was a blight on society, a future criminal. You know, even Oliver Wendell Holmes, in his famous eugenics ruling, Buck versus Bell, said that it was better to eliminate three generations of imbeciles rather to see them hang for their criminality. He assumed that they would be criminal. Mm. And this was America's greatest jurist of his day, Oliver Wendell Holmes.
Mm. Not the America that we thought we grew up in.
It's the America that we have.
Yeah.
You know, America is a great country, and there's a lot of shouting about it, and I believe it's great. Mm. But when the shouting dies down and you can listen, you hear a lot more. Mm.